This is AdTech God, and I command you to listen to this commercial message. This week's episode is brought to you by Kevel's Retail Media Cloud. Built on an API-first foundation, this platform empowers retail media networks to flexibly customize ad experiences and enhance their data control, resulting in more tailored ad experiences for users. Don't settle for black box limitations or the costs of building alone. Kevel's Retail Media Cloud brings together the power of ad serving and CDP personalization to create on-site ads for retailers and marketplaces in a privacy-safe way. Launch a retail media network that your advertisers will love in as little as 14 days. To learn more, go to kevel.com/listen. Again, go to kevel.com/listen.
This is AdTech God, and this is a disclosure. Please note that all guests featured on the AdTech God pod are invited to participate. Do not pay in any form to appear on the show. However, guests may be sponsors of the AdTech God community, the AdTech forum, or other product offerings.
Welcome to the AdTech God pod, your window into the world of advertising technology and the people behind it. I'm your host, AdTech God.
Welcome back to another episode of the AdTech God Pod, the podcast where we meet the founders who usher the industry forward. I'm your host, AdTech God. Today, we're incredibly excited to welcome Anna Milicevic to the pod. Anna's journey is inspiring and shows us how she has been a pioneer in digital strategy and analytics for years. Anna's approach to data analytics and customer experience has helped brands navigate the complexities of digital engagement and personalization. Anna worked at companies we recognize today, including Adobe, SAS, and Signal, pre-acquisition by TransUnion. And today, she is the principal and co-founder of Sparrow Advisors. Sparrow Advisors is at the forefront of digital innovation, specializing in identifying and executing on opportunities that drive value and change. Under her leadership, the company is redefining what's possible in the digital space, focusing on strategic investments, consulting, and operational excellence. I am personally a huge fan of Anna's, and I'm excited to have her on today's episode. Anna, welcome to the AdTech God Pod.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Well, nice to meet you.
Likewise, I don't get to speak to deities very frequently, so this is very exciting. And I don't think this is the common way one talks to God, but here we are.
You know what works? I mean, it usually comes in like meme form or funny dances I send you or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
A new medium we're exploring here today. So that's exciting.
You know what? It's been so much fun. I love this. Yeah. Like it's, I meet such amazing people weekly and it's turning into something that I don't think I'll ever really give up on, but I truly enjoy it. And I'm very thankful for you being here, by the way.
Oh, of course.
And Anna, I want to ask you, you obviously are the co-founder for Sparrow Advisors, but how did you initially get into the industry and what brought you to this point of, you know, entrepreneurship and starting your company?
You know, it was a series of very happy accidents. I think when I look back on my career, there's a very clear path on how I got to today. But while I was making certain professional decisions in the past, I don't recall it being that clear and structured. So I'm a computer scientist by training, and I kind of stumbled into entrepreneurship very early on while I was still at university, and founded a software outsourcing company, and just kind of by virtue of working, started getting really fascinated with how pitching to very different audiences requires you to actually tailor your messaging, tailor your pitch. And of course, I was very quickly sold on the entire concept of persuasion and advertising. And the technology part just kind of stemmed from my background. So sometime in the early aughts, those two came together for me. And I didn't really pursue a traditional entryway from either side. I kind of tackled them both together. I had exited my first company. I had done some work for the United Nations on technology in interesting areas of the world where that's not kind of the first thing that you think of. And then kind of entered the New York startup scene with a pretty interesting proposition It was essentially a premium VOD platform back when VOD and premium weren't really things at all. This was kind of before YouTube was acquired by Google. And that was my first entry into the ad tech landscape. I spent a couple of years in kind of like the Tris Comas guy. You know, I put video on the internet, then radio on the internet, and did a couple of other interesting companies in New York around community, and finally jumped into data. I was head of product at Demdex. That was one of the first DMPs. We were acquired by Adobe. And that kind of solidified my interest in not just ad tech, but now this new and emerging area of MarTech that was kind of sitting alongside this very vibrant and young ecosystem on the ad tech side. So then I, of course, got sucked into MarTech pretty significantly and spent the better part of the next decade going deep into the MarTech side. And finally kind of poked my head up and realized that I have this really, really wide-ranging understanding of the space. Most folks, I think, in our space specialize fairly early on, either on the buy side or the sell side, or in a particular channel, like, you know, if it's CTV or television in general or programmatic as a whole. And I kind of had this very interesting spread of experiences across all of them. So I was able to see things that weren't readily obvious to someone who'd grown up with just one side of the ecosystem or one vertical. And so I partnered with my sister, Maya, who is a revenue leader and who came out of, well, we were together at Demdex and Adobe, and then she went to AppNexus and then to Federated Media. And she was seeing the same kind of thing from a revenue leadership perspective versus mine was more from a product and strategy leadership perspective. And we kind of decided to put those very wide-ranging experiences together for the benefit of the whole industry and build a consulting team that really we didn't have sophisticated industry-specific take on consulting until that kind of time frame of the mid-2010s when we started. And somehow that was 9-ish years ago now, and here we are.
Well, I mean, I think the average startup, what, lasts like 2 years? So yeah. 9 years, I think you're doing pretty well. I couldn't imagine, you know, I spoke to Tim and Chris Vanderhook, and I think they're the podcast right after you. You know, I asked them, you know, how is it working with a sibling? I want to ask you, like, how is it working with your sister?
You know, it's really funny. We get that question a lot. And for us, it was never really a thing we had to think about. It just felt very natural. But I think we have very complementary skill sets. So it's very easy to hand projects off or have both of us kind of have a different perspective on something between the two of us. But we'd also worked together before, so we knew we could. And so it didn't really feel like a big step. When we started our company, we're both very entrepreneurial. And, you know, I think it's wonderful if you can work with someone who is close to you in general. I think in ad tech, we kind of over-index on the sibling commercial pairings. We've got the Vanderhooks, the Goodharts, there's the Millisavai. And I think we've got a couple of others. I'm sorry, sibling pairs, if I'm forgetting some of you, but it feels like it's something somewhat of an established kind of approach in ad tech. So we're all for it.
I mean, the trust is there. I think that's a huge part of having a good business partner.
Yeah, the trust is there. And you know, sometimes it gets difficult to switch from business partner mode into sibling mode and vice versa. But that's just something that you learn over time because, you know, sometimes you can't be both at the same time. So you kind of have to say, hey, I'm talking to you as a business partner now. Here's what we're talking about. And then literally put a different hat on and, you know, go into sibling mode. But I think when I think about the future of work in general, I think, you know, sibling pairs, groups of friends who've worked together and are on their, you know, third, fourth, fifth company. You know, maybe even spouse pairs are I think really, really exciting because it's such an advantage to work closely with someone who you know so well.
Right. Managing the expectations, managing the emotions, understanding strengths and weaknesses without having to be embarrassed about it. I'm sure there's so many benefits.
Exactly. And it's interesting because it's usually folks who are like, yep, I get it. I'd love to be able to, you know, start something with my sibling or with my partner. And then other people who are like, I could never do this with my sibling. Like we would kill each other immediately. And I just think it's such an interesting spread that it seems like it's very binary. It's either you can absolutely do it or no way, you shouldn't even try kind of. So I think we lucked out on that spread.
And what do you think in all of the work and success that you've had in your career, what do you think has been like the greatest milestone or success that you've had during that period of time?
I don't know that I've ever thought about that. I kind of think of careers as something that is never finished and you never get to sit and rest on your laurels. You just kind of keep doing something new and keep innovating and keep moving forward. I think for me, it was interesting to be both on the, you know, receiving end of an acquisition or rather being acquired into a very large company. And then in a very short period of time, being on the other end of that and looking at what potential acquisitions could look like, how to argue for someone getting acquired and working through that whole timeline, really. I'd never thought of it as something to pursue, and it just kind of happened and it unlocked a lot of really, really cool new learnings from me about that change of perspective. And I think it made me a much smarter entrepreneur now that I've seen both sides of that process. So I'm going to guess that would probably be
Yeah. It's easier to say this has been a flop because it's obvious because it just doesn't work. It's harder to say this is successful because everybody's measurement of success is different.
As long as you learn something, even from the, you know, the flops in your career, I still think you're way ahead of where you would normally be. I think it's very boring, or it gets very boring if you are in a very predictable environment. And I don't, you know, I don't think anyone in ad tech is in a very predictable environment. We're such a young industry with so much innovation happening, and, you know, our cycles are fairly quick. You see folks move from, you know, being a director to being an SVP in like 14 months. That's a pretty steep jump in most other industries, if even possible. I think it's as long as you're learning, you're doing well.
Yeah, I agree. I think everything's a learning experience. Even this, you know, even the podcast thing for me has been incredibly eye-opening, just talking to people such as yourself and others, like just learning from their experience, understanding what they've been doing, and just hearing their perspective on things has been incredibly helpful to me on my day-to-day.
Could you ever foresee the podcast being what it is today when you started it?
No way. No way. No. I mean, I started this thing in, what, 2021? I started posting on Twitter, and it was a joke. Like, the whole thing was a joke. It was just me bored, and it somehow took off, and then it just got bigger and bigger. And now I feel like everybody knows it, which makes me a little nervous. But at the same time, I'm like, look, if it wasn't working, nobody would know. So there has to be some sign of success. And that, I guess, would be people are starting to recognize the name and the brand, and they understand my message is positive, and it's all in the name of, you know, uplifting the industry. But no, I never once sat there on my sofa at 10 o'clock at night during the pandemic thinking, this is going to blow up. This is going to be a great podcast. Didn't even think about it, to be honest.
Cheers to that. Well,
it's all been luck. It's 100% luck. And then obviously everybody who supports it across the board has helped.
I find that we over-index in being helpful and supportive as an industry. Like, I've never had somebody kind of say no to a request for, hey, you know, can you deep dive on this thing that you're working on, or can you explain this concept a little bit better, or did I kind of get this right? So I like that a lot about our industry. I think we're naturally collaborative.
We're naturally nice.
Yeah.
Like I think a majority of the people, and I mean like a mass majority of the people, are extremely supportive and kind and nice, and their messages to me are like, keep doing what you're doing, like this is fantastic, like keep grinding away, like, you know, don't forget to take a break and take a couple of days to relax. I'm like, well thank you, even though I've never met you in person, but thank you. Like, that's such nice positive feedback.
Yes, and also thank you, but that's on the calendar in like 2028, so
I hope one day.
Yes.
One day. This is At Tech God, and this is a commercial message. Innovid believes that TV should be open for everyone and controlled by no one. And the time to make that vision a reality is now. That's why Innovid created Harmony, an industry-wide initiative to address the biggest challenges facing CTV advertising today. By optimizing at the infrastructure level, Harmony aims to improve efficiency, enhance transparency and control, and increase ROI, all while reducing carbon emissions and providing better viewing experiences for all. Find out more and get involved at innovid.com/harmony. Again, go to innovid.com/harmony. You have a very great perspective on the industry. There's a lot going on across the board, you know, technology changes, innovation, acquisitions, mergers. But in general, what trends are you seeing in the industry that are positive for us, and where do you see things in, you know, 12 to 18 months?
We've sort of been at this precipice of this whole third-party cookies going away for quite a while now, and it's finally here. And I think it's given us as an industry some leeway to finally start moving towards the ecosystem that we could be versus the one that we've kind of grown with and into over the years. And I think that's really exciting. I have been diving very deep on the Gen AI side recently. And that's the other area that I think kind of coinciding with the death of third-party cookies, with this impetus of, hey, what does advertising look like for the next maybe 10, 15, 20 years? Is really creating an interesting environment where we're going beyond the usual incremental innovation, like let's make this algorithm 10x better, or, you know, let's make this delivery or this specific process a few percentage points better, to, well, what if we started from scratch and built an entire new ecosystem? What would that look like? And those are the kinds of inflection points that I'm really, really fascinated by, not just in our core industry here in ad tech, maybe martech, commerce, but in general, because they don't tend to happen very frequently. So it's almost like we get to be there at the beginning again and re-envision what the commercial internet should look like. And that's a pretty, pretty big ask. I don't know that we understand that this is, as an industry, that this is what is basically being asked of us, but we have the opportunity to redefine how the commercials of the working internet for the next several decades work. And that's a pretty, pretty meaty and exciting problem to solve.
So we've been iterating on the existing technology for years. And now I've noticed this also. The entire logic is starting to change, like the way we want to measure, the way we want to target. It's all being disrupted, which, look, is super exciting and nerve-wracking. And obviously, the industry has been impacted both, you know, negatively and positively by these changes. And I think they'll continue to be that way until the end of this year. But it's exciting. It's kind of exciting to see what people are coming up with, how they're embracing AI or LLM or anything else to try to improve the products across the board. I'm excited for it. Other times I'm a little worried about it, but for the most part, like I think we're looking at a totally different landscape a few years from now. Like I think it's going to look quite different.
Yeah, I think it has to. And you know, I have this conversation with ad tech leaders all the time who will say things like, well, you know, I've got like an ad blocker running. I don't really like, I pay all my subscription fees, so I don't have any video ads anywhere, et cetera. And I keep, you know, pushing back on that going, well, but wait, well, why? Because if you don't believe in advertising, why should a regular consumer believe in it? And we think about what the experience is like for regular consumers just going about their day and, you know, browsing regular stuff on the internet, it's pretty bad. And in spite of this promise and premise of personalized advertising, a lot of it comes across as really, really mistargeted. And so there's this chasm between the utility and value that a regular consumer sees in advertising, which is pretty low, and the utility and value that both advertisers and the rest of us in ad tech, martech, and friends think, I think rightfully so, that advertising has. And we need to reconcile that or else we're not going to have an industry in a few years. So yeah, there's a lot of rebuilding going on and reimagining and trying to figure out how to align the commercial models of the past with what's possible now. I think just the other day, I don't know if you've caught it, but there's this new gen AI search engine called Perplexity. They announced that they are going to start experimenting with ads, which would mean that they would need to build the entire plumbing and rails and ad tech stack to be able to deliver some type of ad and then figure out what the native format would be on their platform and all of this cool stuff that no one's really done since Google came up with AdSense with like 20 something years ago now. That's the excitement of figuring that kind of stuff is balanced on the other end by the understanding that a lot of scaled businesses that scaled in this previous era also need to change and maybe they can't. So there's going to be a lot of short-term disruption, I think, before we can see a better system emerge.
And what do you feel in the way things are today? What do you feel keeps you up at night the most in regards to like ad tech, advertising, media?
I mean, I sleep pretty well. So I don't know that there's a single thing here that would keep me up at night. What I worry is that we further devalue the experience for regular users and regular people. When I see some of these very early, like hyper excited applications of Gen AI that are just awful on the receiving end of this, you know, like articles hastily written by some ChatGPT clone that are just incredibly poor quality because really they're not meant to be read. They're just meant to live there so that some ads can be served against them. Or same goes for like automatically generated video ads and all this stuff that seems to belong more in like an episode of Black Mirror than in what I would hope our reality is. That I just don't want us to continue alienating regular people from that magic, a really, really well executed ad.
Right. I feel like, you know, we talk a lot about personalization in our industry, and then we take a look at some of the kind of AI generated stuff, and it's really not personalized. It's so poorly done.
Yeah.
AI is at the point where you can fully depend on it. I use it. Obviously, I use ChatGPT and I'll type in a prompt and I'll get an idea and then I'll spin up that idea and make it my own. But it's really just to kind of get those creative juices going. And then I'm like, okay, I kind of like this piece and that piece, but I'm going to alter it to my own liking. So it's a helpful tool, but I feel like some people are using it as if it's the say all kind of final write up, and it doesn't look natural and it doesn't read natural at all.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of that, this kind of general inshittification of a lot of stuff that used to be very artisanal and folks would take pride in constructing a great website and things like that. And we've lost that. Now it's all volume and scale. And when that's the goal you're aiming for, then you're going to get some really, really strange results along the way. So I think that's one of those things that gets worse before it gets better. But we have to kind of keep walking through whatever this particular mispersonalization hell is to get on the other side of it.
And Anna, what do you think that, you know, there's obviously, everybody has different perspectives on different things and different trends and technologies coming out. But what do you think is something that most people in ad tech today would disagree on?
It seems like we're very actively all disagreeing on when cookies will actually go away and how serious of a solution we need to replace them. Because just in a regular week, I'll go from client meetings where clients are in complete and utter denial and asking things like, well, surely Google's going to postpone the deadline by a little bit. And, you know, then I get that rather thankless job of explaining that there's a very large population of users that actually are already under the third-party cookies don't exist for us group, which is somewhat of a, you know, shocker to a lot of clients and prospects. And then on the other end, there are folks who are very furiously and aggressively building for the future, who are sort of looking back at this and going, well, why aren't you all more energized about this and moving faster? And, you know, when I think about things like new standards of measurement, for example, or some identity providers, I sit on the board of ID5 as a leading identity provider. And, you know, like there are folks there who clearly see the future and are building for the future and are kind of, you know, very patiently waiting for people to come along from that first group of folks who are in denial about cookies going away and stuff like that. So I think that the disagreement is mostly around the severity of cookies going away and, you know, kind of what comes after, which is, I think, a natural disagreement to have at this point. I just wish that we would all be a little bit further along in our acceptance of, well, cookies weren't really meant to be used for any of this stuff that we've used them for. So maybe it's time to move to something more robust and more fitting for 2024 versus, you know, 2004, if that.
And if you weren't working in ad tech, what do you think you would be doing if you weren't in this industry?
Ooh. So I guess I can't cop out with the usual, you know, running a bar in a beach town or something like that. I think I would probably still be in technology of some kind. And where I think my superpowers have always lied is the ability to communicate highly technical concepts to a non-technical audience, and then vice versa, to be that bridge between a business problem and a business need and a business KPI and a more technical audience, or, you know, basically every other function in a business. So I'm a natural connector and glue, and I'd like to think that I would still be somewhere in media. I often say there's one job out there that I really, really want, and that's Ted Sarandos' job, but I don't think I'm getting that one anytime soon. Hi, Ted.
Ted, if you're hearing it, she wants your job.
Ted, call me if you're hearing this. But yeah, I think media is such a stretchy industry that it has so many of these interesting both human and tech bits and pieces that I'm very attracted to. And I often say that if I were born somewhere else, I was born in Serbia, I would probably be doing something with like shipping, but like shipping on the seas. Like if I were born in like the Netherlands, I would be working on some tech systems for like sea-related dispatching. So I think that's about as far away from ad tech as one can get.
Be like Sparrow Sea Freight Services.
Yes, like seagull. We would probably be seagull.
Like seagull.
Yes.
Awesome. Anna, thank you again so much for being on this podcast. That actually brings us to the end. And you've been an incredible supporter, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was great.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the AdTech God Pod, a podcast for the people about the people that make AdTech great. Stay connected with me for more insights, trends, and interviews in the realm of AdTech. Don't miss out on our latest updates, so follow me on X, Instagram, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Don't forget, ATG Slack community has insights, networking opportunities, and jobs. Keep the conversation going and stay at the forefront of AdTech innovation.